Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The Bucks came to LA to take on the Clippers. And if you're expecting a battle of the league MVP and the finals MVP, then you didn't get it. Because Kawhi Leonard did not play last night due to load management. And I'll get to more of that in a second. But while you didn't get that, you did get this. You got Milwaukee winning 129-124. And you got Giannis completely going off. 38 points, 16 rebounds, 9 assists, and the W. In other words, if you want to talk about the best player in the game right now, and you're talking LeBron and Kawhi, you better make that a three-man argument. I mean, do I even have to say that? Because he just became the first player in league history with 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in the first 8 games. And he's done it without shooting the ball that well. This guy's making league history, and his shot still really is not falling, either from deep or from the line. That shows you how dominant Giannis is right now. And he was again last night. I mean, how would you like this guy to impact the game? Because he can pretty much do it any which way. Do you want him to do it on defense? Because he can lock you the hell up.
Rebound, long, taken by the Clippers. Harkless down the lane. To the rim, sent out of there by Giannis. Whoa, he got all the letters in Spalding. How high did he get? My goodness.
My goodness is right. How many letters did he get in Spalding? Bucks Radio. So he'll lock you up defensively, or he'll go with an old-school jam.
Bledsoe driving on Shamet. Right there to Giannis, who throws it down with two hands.
Yeah, he did. Or how about this? How about Giannis with that new tool in the toolbox? How about Giannis with that new weapon, the three ball?
Giannis pulls the trigger on a three and nails it. ABC, easy as 1-2-3 for the MVP. Bucks lead by 3.
ABC, easy as 1-2-3 for the MVP. Damn.
ABC, easy as 1-2-3 for the MVP. Bucks lead by 3.
Bucks lead by 3. I forgot that. My man. All right, so Giannis was 4 of 7 from deep. That ties a career high. Hey, listen, if that becomes a thing, if Giannis knocking down threes really is part of his arsenal going forward, good luck with that. Man, that bleep's not even fair. It's just not right having a guy that big, that smooth, that agile, who can take you off the dribble or stick a 3 in your eye. ABC, easy as 1-2-3 for the MVP. Bucks by 3. I like to eat a green pea. It ain't about me.
ABC, easy as 1-2-3.
I scrape my knee
for the MVP. Bucks lead by 3.
Gee, you know, it wasn't just a freak show either. There was also George Hill with that putback dunk.
Shot clock at 7. Bledsoe from the left elbow. Jumper, no good. Jam down George Hill. Timed it perfectly. Mr. Steady.
And it wasn't just Mr. Steady, George Hill. Then you got Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe was so great. How about him flipping off his brain for 1 second and forgetting that he runs in the NBA and that it's not pickup rules?
Oh my gosh, Bledsoe just dribbled the ball inbounds and didn't pass it. Oh my gosh, what a mental burp for Bledsoe. Instead of passing the ball to Giannis, he just dribbled the ball in. My goodness, you rarely see that. Wow.
That's why it's so awesome, because you rarely see that. You rarely see a, quote, mental burp.
Mental burp.
My guy was handed the ball by the ref to inbound it, and then he just dribbled up the court like it was some local run at LA Fitness. And not against the LA Clippers.
Oh my gosh.
What a mental burp that was. Bledsoe had to be shocked when it wasn't make it, take it. And when guys weren't calling their own fouls.
Mental burp.
But really, last night was not about what Giannis did on the court. Or the mental burp. Or George Hill. Or anything else. What last night was about in the end was that Kawhi was not on the court. Kawhi was not on the court with Giannis. And the reason for that, of course, was load management and his knee. And as soon as that started coming out earlier in the week, people started to freak out and lose their minds. They started complaining that it's bad for basketball. That back in the day, there was no such thing as load management. The guys never sat out. That it was bad for the fans. Bad for national TV. Bad for the league. Fact is, some of the people who were complaining the loudest, the people who felt strongly about this, the people who felt most strongly about how wrong it is and that it's ruining the game, these are the same people who have a vested interest in making sure that Kawhi does play. You know, like the Clippers have a vested interest in making sure Kawhi is healthy and that he stays healthy. That's their job. That's their responsibility. Now, don't get me wrong. It does suck for the fans who bought tickets hoping to see Giannis and Kawhi get after it. It's a major drag. But the Clippers are not focused on winning games in early November. They're built to win games in mid-June. And to do that, you need a fresh, healthy Kawhi Leonard. So this is not, and don't come in here with this, this is not about Kawhi ducking Giannis. You think somebody as competitive as Kawhi is ducking anybody? Hell no. It's not about Kawhi being tired and wanting his blankie. He's not soft. This guy's tough as hell. He's somebody who's dealing with a chronic condition in his quad. Again, I understand. It's frustrating. You want to see the best players go up against each other. But you know what's worse than the best players not going up against each other? The best players missing an entire season, which is what Kawhi pretty much did 2 years ago because of that leg. If you're a Clippers fan, would you rather see him in November or in June when it matters? Because the Clippers would tell you it is no coincidence that he played 60 regular season games last year and then played his best basketball of his entire career in the postseason. If you're an NBA fan, what would be better for the game? Kawhi grinding through a chronic condition in his quad just so he can play every single game and every back-to-back so tough guys from back in the day can respect him? Only for this guy's leg to blow up and shut him down in March. Would that be good? Would that be better for the game? If the guy was done for the season after the All-Star break, would you be saying, that's cool, that's good, that's fine? He can't play in the most important games, but damn, we got to see him in all those back-to-backs in November. And yes, I'm aware, he said he feels great. Excellent. LA's goal is to make sure he still feels great in May and in June, not November and December. But remember, part of the reason he does feel great is that he did not play over the summer. He sat out those full contact sessions in their Hawaii training camp. The league is fine with it. A league spokesman said, quote, Kawhi Leonard is not a healthy player under the league's resting policy and as such is listed as managing a knee injury. In the LA Clippers injury report, the league office, in consultation with the NBA's director of sports medicine, is comfortable with the team medical staff's determination that Leonard is not sufficiently healthy to play in back-to-back games at this time. End quote. I know I'm spending a lot of time on this, but one more thing. Everybody knew this was how this was going to go down before the start of the season. Everybody knew there was going to be load management, and not just for Kawhi, but for other players as well. So the issue is not that it's a surprise. The issue is about communication. The issue is about the schedule. The issue is about back-to-backs, and in particular, back-to-backs involving nationally televised games. The fact that this guy did not play last night was not a surprise to anybody who's been paying attention. In fact, it shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody at all. It should have been communicated and over-communicated so everybody knew what they were buying when they bought it. Doc Rivers is responsible for winning basketball games, and so is Kawhi. Yes, it's entertainment, but the smart basketball move is to rest him, keep him healthy, even if that means pissing off the old guard and the entertainment side. Everybody knew that was going to be the case after last year. The Clippers saw Toronto's blueprint for dealing with Kawhi's health, and they're going to follow it. Everybody else should get used to it. I've got no problem with it. I understand it. But then again, I, for one, have been paying attention, so there's no surprise there. Relax, old heads. Times have changed. I know you hate that, but you can't argue against it. Kawhi got a ring with the same approach last season. It's about the scoreboard in June, not November. Even if none of you want to hear it. I get it. I understand it. 1-800-636-8686. The Clippers have made a major investment in him. They have a lot vested in him. They have to protect the asset. Am I right, Doc Rivers?
Feels great, but he feels great because of what we've been doing, you know, and we're just going to continue to do it. There's no concern here, but we want to make sure, you know, I think Kawhi made the statement he's never felt better. It's our job to make sure he stays that way, you know, and that's important. But he played a lot of minutes in the playoffs last year. And, you know, so it's not a health thing. Really, it is in some ways. We want him to just keep feeling better, you know, and getting better.
You know, the thing that I said for the last 15 minutes, it's easy. Matt Breida is my guest. Matt, really nice to have you on. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Good, good. Matt, I appreciate the visit. As mentioned, you're 8-0. You're coming off that win over Arizona. You've got Seattle coming in Monday night. The entire nation's going to watch. What is life like for you and for the 49ers right now?
You know, they're still taking week by week like we always do, preparing for Seattle and, you know, trying to get another win.
All right, fair enough. So when you consider, Matt, last year, the team had a number of injuries, and as a result, it was kind of a frustrating 4-12 season. What was it like to go through that? And then having gone through that, what's it feel like to be 8-0?
You know, it's tough going through situations, but at the same time, you know, it's going to make you better. I feel like that's why we're 8-0 right now, because just all the adversity we faced the last 2 years and what this team's been through. So, you know, I feel like that helped us in the long run, and that's a big reason why we're 8-0 right now.
Matt Breida joining us. You know, Matt, I've had a number of your teammates on the show this year, and I've asked every one of them when they knew this team might be special or had that potential. When did you first realize that this team had the kind of potential to do something really significant? For instance, was it in camp? Was it during the season? Or maybe at some other point?
I knew it actually the first year, you know, when Kyle and John got here towards the end of the stretch when we had that winning streak. I know that we just had a lot of young players, and, you know, once all of us, you know, got the playing time and learned the system, that this team could do things that are special, and then just carried over each offseason, and especially going into this last offseason, I knew that our team was going to be great. I feel like we had the right pieces, everyone put in the work, and, you know, everything's starting to unfold how we want it to.
So, Matt, you've got the right pieces, you've got everybody putting in the work, and then, of course, the really important thing, you got that buy-in. Like, people always talk about culture like it's not that important, but it really is. For instance, you arrived in Kyle Shanahan's first year. You've seen how the team has grown. How do you explain the way everybody is bought in about the team, and it's not about the individual, is it?
Not at all. I feel like it also reminds me of my college team, you know, how close everyone is on the team. Like you said, it's not about the individual. All of us don't care about our stats or, you know, if we go to the Pro Bowl or all that stuff. All of us care about, you know, just winning at the end of the day and making sure we got each other's back. And I feel like that's a big reason why, you know, all the adversity went through, even games when we played like the Steelers. We had like 5 turns on offense, but the defense had our back, you know. I just feel like things like that have helped us get to this point.
Matt Breida is joining us. You know, Matt, everybody around the league talks about the 49ers running game. How would you describe what it's like to play in Kyle Shanahan's scheme and the way it all comes together that way?
It's amazing, man. It's probably one of the funnest offenses to play. You know, definitely one of the hardest, but once you learn it, there's so many ways for you to get open, you to get the ball. You know, it's a dream come true for any running back, receiver, tight end, even quarterback. And, you know, everything's been working out great. And Kyle's, you know, like I've been saying, probably the smartest coach I've been around as far as schematically coming up with plays and just the way he's able to decipher defenses.
You know, on top of that, the thing that really impresses me is the offense has done a lot of this with injuries. Left tackle Joe Staley, right tackle Mike McGlinchey, fullback Kyle Juszczyk. I mean, these guys are all out. So when you consider the fact that you're clicking without critical components like that, how much better is this offense going to be when they do come back?
Oh, it's going to be 10 times better. I mean, you got guys stepping up like Brunskill and School that, you know, coming in this year, you know, not expected to fulfill those roles, but they have. And it just means a lot, even guys like Ross Dwelly, that we know we can count on if those guys do go down again. They got the reps. They've been in there. It's going to be nothing new to them. So we all feel great about that.
Then, Matt, you got that big game Monday night. The last time you hosted a Monday night game, it was Week 5 against Cleveland, and you broke off that 83-yard touchdown run less than 2 minutes into the game. The team was dominant on both sides of the ball. Knowing how special that night was, knowing what it means to have Seattle coming into your place Monday night, how fired up are you for that game?
Super fired up. You know, it's a divisional game, not only that, but it's a big divisional rivalry. And, you know, I always look forward to this game every year, you know, playing twice a year. So I feel like it's going to be a great game. They're going to get our best shot, and I believe we're going to get their best shot.
All right, so you mentioned, or I mentioned, that run against the Browns. You said that it reminded you of runs that you've been doing since you first started playing football when you were 6. I mean, it seems to me like you're taking this all in stride. It's one thing to do it to other 6-year-olds, but how did it feel to be running away from the best of the best on this level?
It feels amazing. You know, just growing up, you want to play at this level. You want to be successful at this level. And for me to still be able to do it at this level, it's just an amazing experience. And, you know, I'm blessed every day to be able to play this game.
Matt Breida joining us for a few more moments. You know, Matt, I think that a lot of people know your story. But for those who don't, you played your high school ball at Nature Coast Technical High School in Florida. You set records. Your high school coach was trying to do everything he could to get programs to come recruit you, but most schools were not interested. What was that experience like?
You know, it was a very humbling experience, you know, because coming out, you know, I feel like, you know, I was definitely one of the best players. But at the same time, you know, it made me stay humble, made me work hard. And, you know, I feel like God is everything for a reason. So even though I didn't get recruited by all the big schools, you know, he put me at Georgia Southern for a reason. And, you know, everything has worked out up until this point.
All right, so you go there, and you play mostly special teams as a freshman. Then you dominated your sophomore and junior year under head coach Willie Fritz, who Matt I had on the show earlier this year. Then he accepts the job at Tulane. There's a scheme change. And then you didn't have as big of a senior year, and then you went undrafted. So after being overlooked and coming out of high school and then making your point, you had to go through it again. What was it like the second time and that experience?
Same thing like I said before. You know, I was just believing in God, and, you know, like you said, I went through it before. So I feel like, you know, this is the path I was meant to take. And, you know, it actually, you know, worked out really good. I'm in a great organization. And not only that, but now, you know, I have a little kid that look up to me and say that, you know, they just want to be just like me and do the same thing. So, you know, if I can do it, anyone else can do it.
No, that's true. I mean, after being overlooked in the past, now you're becoming a household name. You're breaking off electric runs in the NFL. People are starting to recognize you. People look up to you. Matt, before you go, I want to ask you about your family, because part of your story is the fact that your mom and your dad, Terry and Mike, adopted you the day after you were born. You said that when you were growing up, there'd be nights when your father wouldn't eat, or he'd eat very little to make sure that you and your brother had enough to be full. What was life like for you growing up, and especially in that family?
You know, I had a very good childhood just because my parents, you know, everything, the sacrifice that they made for both of us. And, you know, I thank them every day for that, because, you know, I could have been in a worse situation. I could have been homeless, you know, without a family. So, you know, I thank them every day, and I'm very lucky to have them in my life. And, just like you said, for things like that, that my parents, they made the sacrifices for us, always made sure they gave us the best of everything that, they could possibly afford. So, you know, that's why I always told myself, you know, if I ever got to this level, and, you know, I just want to make sure I'm able to take care of them, because, you know, they basically take care of me my whole life.
Hey, Matt, I want to elaborate on that point, because you probably wouldn't, but I want to say this. Your father was diagnosed with viral meningitis, which was life-threatening, and then he was in a car accident, and then your mother was in a serious car accident. When you were visiting Georgia Southern on a recruiting trip with your parents, Jeff Monken, who was the head coach, said the thing that stuck out to him more than anything, even more than your football ability, was how you cared for your parents. He said, quote, he would always help his mom and get her situated at every meal. You could see the sense of responsibility he took in that family, end quote. It's extremely high praise. How important has it been for you to be able to look out for them and now take care of them?
Like I said, very extremely important. You know, they've been doing it my whole life. And, you know, I love them, you know, just as they're my real parents. You know, there's no difference between color or anything like that. And, you know, like I said, anything I can do for them, I'm going to do, you know, just as much as I can give back to them. Because, like I said, I could have been in a worse situation in my life, you know, without a family, without a brother. And just for them to provide that for me my whole life, I just want to do as much as possible as I can to make sure that they're well off.
Matt Breida, my guest. And a final thought, you mentioned being a role model. I mentioned this in the intro. You were a finalist for the Senior Class Award in college. It honors activity in the community and the classroom, as well as character in competition. So what's that mean to you, and what's it like for you to be seen as a role model?
It means a lot, because, you know, I feel like a lot of times a lot of us get caught up in just football, and there's more to life than just football. You know, we all love to play this game, you know, for the rest of our lives, but at the end of the day, in reality, you know, we can't. And, you know, I feel like you're going to be remembered for the things that you off the field more than you do on the field. So for me to be, you know, recognized as a finalist for that award, you know, said a lot about my character, but, you know, it just meant a lot to me, because knowing that I'm also doing the right things in the community besides, you know, just playing football and running touchdowns.
San Francisco 8-0 on the season. They've got a big one Monday night. They're at home against Seattle. Matt Breida having a big season for them. Matt, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for making time, and really good to have you on the show, Matt.
All right, thanks for having me.
Car Flag Nation, mount up. Mount up. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome, and awesome Monday to you. Back in SoCal, but had an amazing weekend. Going to New York and back.
Jim has a private plane.
The NFL's Week 9. It's been a hell of a week, right?
Correct.
It was Lamar Jackson beating Belichick in that allegedly legendary defense for the big old clown suit.
Yeah!
Bottled up, he escaped. 15, how? 10, Mr. Impossible.
Last night wasn't even about him as a quarterback. Last night was about him as an NFL MVP.
How?
Seriously.
And he wants this, and some of you motherfuckers are mean, man, because you know what the f- I'll do that little
man,
dude,
who
bro.
Knows how many millions of dollars he made for that fight. He wanted pizza.
You see, he punches old people in the face because those are fights that he could win.
I'll double fist it, and I will talk junk about Conor McGregor.
I'll f- that little guy up, man.
Dan Wetzel joining us.
Everybody wants to fight Conor McGregor. Direct quotes in MMA press conferences are not the best. This is not the Masters, right? We literally fought for a belt that had a swear in it.
He's a midget.
And disaster for the Jets.
Hey, listen, Eyes. You are not good at coaching. And now you're done.
No, I'm
why
done.
Are you looking at me like that, Oz?
What did I do?
Another epic disaster for the Jets.
What a mess, man.
E-Y-E-S. Eyes, eyes, eyes. Champagne, orange juice. He reaches up and he inadvertently hits one of the champagne glasses. She reacted and dumped the entire tray on him. Everything on the tray dumped on this dude. He became a giant mimosa.
Get a big mimosa on your pants.
Ken Niumatalolo got Jamel Carruthers. How do you explain how he got to where he is right now?
It just shows, Jim, that I'm overrated as a coach. I mean, this guy was fifth string. I mean, how did I not see that earlier?
Sixth in the league in rushing, second in the league with 9 sacks allowed, second in the league in third down conversion rates. But, oh, don't tell those pencil neck geeks over at PFF. And you know,
yeah, Popeyes, man. Shout out to Popeyes. They, you know, send me.
Popeyes did not re-release the most popular fast food item of all time until yesterday. And he had been eating it.
Eat it, Hud.
We're going to threaten them on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Friendster. And then we're going to go to Foursquare and Tumblr.
Oh, there's a cat. A black cat has taken the field.
We see cat, mate.
A black cat is running from the 20.
If there are any Giants fans listening who want to blame that game on that cat, you're a loser. How do you explain them losing 4 in a row coming into that game when the cat was nowhere to be found? They didn't have a good thing going. And you know why that is? They're not a good team.
That is a touchdown.
PJ Fleck.
And they understand that the dream is the journey and the enjoyment is in the journey. Even when you're failing, you're growing. You get enough special people together collectively, rowing the boat in the same direction, you got a chance to be really, really successful.
Touchdown, Buffalo, and Cole Beasley.
Cole Beasley joins us. So what's your impression of the Bills Mafia so far?
Actually, my last two touchdowns, I've gotten to jump in the stands and party with them a little bit. I actually got beer all over me when I jumped in the stand. So we had a good party on Sunday. It was awesome.
Today I want to announce that Dwight Howard is my Jim Rome Player of the Week.
I'm still a champion.
No, actually, he's the Jim Rome Player of the Season. No, wait. Dwight Howard is my Jim Rome Man of the
Won't
Year.
Won't let anybody tell me anything different.
Yeah, I said it. Is there anybody under the age of 150 that eats those things? Come on, Ritt. The least shocking thing I've heard in the last several months is that Garrett Ritt eats Neckos. Come on, Pops.
It's lit!
Jahlil Adai is my guest. What did you see on that interception? How good did it feel to come down with that ball and then chase it with the chopper celebration?
Oh, it felt good, man. And I was in London on foreign soil, so I had to hit him with the chopper style.
This is the chopper!
Who am I? Am I Alvin or am I Van Smack?
Hi, my name is Alvin DeLauro.
Is that the real Alvin?
This is Jim Rome.
Now you tell me, is that not a great impression? Herman Moore is my guest.
Number 47. And when you start remembering guys' numbers so easily, then you know.
That's such a great point. What other number or other numbers do you remember?
Steve Atwater.
Yeah.
Carnell Lake. Ronnie Lott.
I'm not f***ing leaving!
We're playing in Los Angeles. This is our home, and this is where we're planning to be.
Hey, Dean, are you going anywheres?
We're not going anywheres.
I mean, ultimately, you will bounce, right?
A long time.
Good job, Dean.
Thank you.
John Dornbos is my guest.
And I decided I'm going to live in vision. I'm not going to live in circumstance and bring pride back to my last name. So when people hear the name Dornbos, they think of something great. They think of something positive and not of my dad murdering my mom.
Hey, Jimmy, is this the beef jerky segment? And then I accidentally cross swords with some dude.
Cross swords?
ABC, easy as 1, 2, 3.
Chargers and Raiders at the dump in Oakland.
You should thank Toby in Houston for putting Larry Brown's crank on the map forever.
And yeah, I know Steve Grogan. I actually hung out with Russ Francis and Steve Nelson at fundraising. And the yacht hooks are compliments of our captain.
Andre Tippett's been on my yacht. Was the point of slowing that down to super slow-mo to make sure that everybody understood that he said penis? Patrick Corbin joins me.
I think we're the oldest team in baseball. And, I mean, Howie was obviously a huge part of that, and I'm just glad for a lot of those guys that we finally did it.
High blood pressure is weak.
Hey, Alvin, can you get your guy out? Dude, I'm trying. Tommy, when he found out he got in the Hall of Fame, dude, he's been, like, unbearable.
Roll the boat, scan my
he'll go for
his eyebrow was literally flipped over in front of his eye.
But eyes?
Wore everything. Wore me.
I'll f*** that little guy up, man.
And the cat is in the CDW red zones.
Poop management.
It'll be cranked up pretty good.
Remember the chocolate fountain? Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good night now!
Everything about that was absolutely amazing. James Bradbury joins us right now. James, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. I'm great. All right, so the season got off to kind of a tough start when you had close losses to the Rams in Tampa Bay. I guess at that point it might have been easy for guys to kind of give in a little bit, but nobody did. You've won five of your last six. What's it say about the character and the guys you have in that locker room?
I think it definitely says they're resilient, you know, and, you know, we got a high sense of self, so we know what we're about. We know the type of team we have. We knew we were capable of getting some wins together, so that was pretty much it.
All right, so when I look back on that game this past Sunday, you led 17-0 at halftime against the Titans, but then Tennessee comes out, they score on their first possession. Your offense comes out, you gain 6 yards on the first three plays. The punt team comes out to kick from your own 36. What were you thinking at that point, and then what did you make of that fake punt that was called?
Well, I didn't even know we had a fake punt call, to be honest with you. But when I saw that it was Colin running the ball, you know, I was very confident he was going to get the first down. I knew Colin, he had a running back history back in high school, so he was a pretty good running back in high school, so I knew he was going to get the first down.
Right, for those who missed it, Colin is Colin Jones. He takes a snap. He gets hit early in the run. But, man, he powered through multiple Titans to get the 5 yards needed for the first down. He said that he had been waiting 9 years for that play. You just said to me you didn't even know you guys had that call. What's that saying? How fired up were you by the confidence that Ron Rivera showed to call that play and run that play deep in your own end?
I was definitely glad we called it. I mean, we practice on fakes and stuff every practice, but, you know, you just wait for the right time to make the call, and we finally did. So I was excited for Colin. I was excited that we converted the fourth down and let the offense stay on the field. Because at that point, you just want to run the clock out and make sure you get the dub or the win.
Right. James Bradbury joining us. You mentioned the offense. As long as we're talking about offense, you got Christian McCaffrey. He had 166 yards from scrimmage. He had 3 touchdowns. I mean, he's having games like that so often, it seems like it's almost normal. As a defensive player, what is it about McCaffrey that makes him so dangerous?
I mean, his matchup is typically on linebackers and sometimes it's safety. But you know it's going to be a mismatch because the type of player that he is, the caliber of player that he is, you know, he's very quick, very shifty. He got some speed. He's actually a little bit more stout than people believe. You know, he can run through you, run around you, jump over you. He can do it all.
Carolina's James Bradbury joining us. You know, you're having a huge year so far. If you and I were to go back, you were drafted in 2016, and you made an impact immediately. You played 45 games coming into this season. You were among the league leaders in passes defense last year with 15. But coming into this year, you set a goal to get more interceptions. Why was that something that was important to you? And then how'd you go about approaching that and making that a reality?
I mean, just some of the conversations I had with, you know, with coaches, players, you know, ex-players and stuff. I mean, they tell you interceptions are the game changers. You know, that's how you get paid in this league. That's how you stick around in the league is get turnovers. And, I mean, that was my goal. You know, I want to put us in the best position to win games and also want to be productive at the same time. So I knew I had to get more interceptions.
It's working, too. You've got a career high in interceptions already this season. Now, on top of that, you're one of the league leaders in tackles by cornerbacks since you entered the league back in 2016. And it seems like there's a lot of corners who might shy away from tackling and contact, but that's not your style at all. What's your attitude when it comes to hitting?
I mean, when I first got in the league, you know, Coach Wilkes, that was my first second cornerbacks coach. You know, he put a lot of emphasis on cornerbacks coming up and making tackles. I mean, ever since then, I mean, that's been our mindset as cornerbacks in our defensive scheme. You know, we have to be able to tackle. We have to be physical. You got to be eager to come up and help out in the run. Because, I mean, if you stop the run, you know, most teams not going to just beat you just passing the ball all over the place. You know, you got to have a good run game, and that's what we try to eliminate it here.
Carolina's James Bradbury joining us. I'm glad you mentioned Steve Wilks because there's this great story about before the draft. He came to Samford. And he lined up against you. He said to cover him the way you would cover a receiver, and then he left with bruises on his chest and his rib cage. I mean, is that how that went? What do you remember about that day?
I mean, I just remember him and Mr. Beam coming. He's the general manager with the Buffalo Bills. He was with us at the time. So he came over, and they put us through a workout, and then we got to the part of the session where we was working on press technique, and he was just telling me, give me certain techniques I need to use.
And he was telling me to jam him in his chest is how I would do a normal receiver. And that's what I did. And I guess he didn't expect me to hit him so hard. But, you know, I was going to give him what I had. I hit him in his chest. But he didn't let me know I hurt him until I got drafted and I actually got on the team. So at the time, I didn't know that he was hurt. But, you know, I heard him pretty good.
That's a great story. I was going to say, you answered this in part. I was going to say, I've got a lot of respect for Steve Wilks, but was there any part of you that was thinking, man, Coach is not exactly a young dude. I can't go all out on him from a physical standpoint. Or were you going to make sure that he felt you and knew about your game?
I was definitely going to make sure that he knew me, knew my game and whatnot. I knew that I was a physical corner. But if you ask me to show you what I can do, I'm going to do that for sure.
James Bradbury is joining us. All right, so you made a name for yourself around the league so far with how you play, how you show up against guys like Julio Jones, Mike Evans, Mike Thomas. You're not really ever going to make it about you, but now you're becoming more and more well-known to fans and you're becoming more and more recognized. How are you handling that? Is it fun for you, or do you feel like maybe you still have to come out of your shell a little bit?
A little bit of both. You know, as people start recognizing me, I'm called to speak to people more often, called to sign more autographs and whatnot. I have to come out of my shell and, be sociable. But at the same time, you know, I feel like it's a medium in between. You know, not too many people recognize me, so I'm still quiet. I still stay in my own space.
It's a good place to be, right? Like you want to be recognized for how you're playing, but you want to be able to kind of move around and not have it be a big deal. It's a good place to be. So the team announced earlier this week that Cam Newton was going on IR, and he'd be done for the season. I know the confidence you have in Kyle Allen, but when you know what Cam has gone through, you know what Cam has battled through and how much he wants to be out there, how tough is it to see his season end the way it did?
It's definitely tough to see it end like that with another injury. But that's the life of an NFL player. You know, you go through injuries, you go through ups and downs. You just got to be able to fight, attack that rehab and recovery with all you got, and make sure you come back the next season 100%. And then as far as Kyle Allen, you know, we're going to rally behind him because, I mean, he's been playing his butt off. He's been studying his butt off. You know, he's been doing what he needs to do to win football games, and that's what he's been doing for us.
I was going to say, what do you make of the job he's done and the way he carries himself and the way he kind of rallies that offense? What kind of impressions do you have of him?
I mean, he just got a calm demeanor, a calm swagger about him. You know, you can see the confidence in him, but it's also not a it's not arrogant. You know, he's not scared to go out there and play ball. You know, he's going to make the right decisions. Of course, he's not going to get the ball away over to the defense. And, you know, he's going to win games. Like I said, he's been winning, and that's what we're going to rally behind.
That's what you want from a young quarterback. James Bradbury is joining me for another moment or so. All right, so you're facing Aaron Rodgers on Sunday. As you get ready to face him, what are the things that you're focused on doing to make life tougher for him and that offense?
We know he's a smart quarterback, so you just try to change up how you line up sometimes and change up your technique, you know, to try to throw him off, try to get him to throw a bad pass. And, he's a smart guy, has a strong arm. So, I mean, all you got to do is just go out there and play your game and just stay locked on the receiver because you never know when he's going to convert the route and throw it deep.
James, how tough is it to confuse a guy like that? I mean, Aaron Rodgers has seen essentially everything. How tough is it to confuse somebody like that?
It's very tough, but at that point, you just got to watch film, and you got to make sure you practice hard. You got to practice what you're going to do in the practice so you can do it in the game. And but it's definitely hard, though. You got to watch a lot of film.
He's having a big year. He was the 62nd pick overall in 2016. He is a cornerback for the Panthers. They're 5-3. They are in second in the NFC South, and they've got a big one against Green Bay on Sunday. James Bradbury, my guest. James, great to have you on. Thanks so much for doing that. Good luck.
Thanks for having me on.
We are joined by Nationals pitcher Patrick Corbin. Patrick, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jim?
Good, good. Listen, it's been a while since you and I spoke, but I got to ask you, it's been a little over a week since you got the win in Game 7 of the World Series. How is life as a World Series champion, and does it feel the way you thought that it would?
Yeah, I don't know if it's sinking yet, but this last week's been crazy. We've been doing so much, traveling all over the place, going to great places, got to go to the White House, Capitals game, just things like that. And I think this week now I'm going to just relax, enjoy it, and look back on it.
All right, so before we get into the World Series itself and specifically Game 7, take me back, Patrick, a little bit. You were coming off an all-star season with Arizona. You were a free agent. There was a lot of interest, a lot of teams with really good rosters that felt like you were the kind of guy that could put them over the top. So what was it about Washington that caught your attention?
Like you said, coming off a year that I had, had some options with some great teams. Just really looking at Washington was the rotation that they had. Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer and some of the younger pieces that they did have on the team was really exciting. And they've been winning a lot of baseball games over the years. And I thought if I could join them, could only help and give us an opportunity to do something that we did this year.
We're talking to Patrick Corbin. You know, you mentioned that pitching staff. As an elite pitcher, what's it like to come to work every day and know that you're surrounded by so many elite starting pitchers? How much did you learn from them, and how much did they learn from you?
Yeah, I mean, you know you have a chance to win every game when you go out there and you have pitchers that can keep us in games. And, I mean, you look at some of these guys, what they do and how competitive Max is, and the year that Strasburg had was incredible. So you just want to be a part of it. You want to do your job and go out there and just be yourself.
Patrick Corbin joining us. I'm going to ask him about Max in a minute, but earlier in the postseason, he said that it felt like you had been a part of that clubhouse a lot longer than you really had. How do you explain that and that amazing chemistry that exists in that clubhouse?
Yeah, it just kind of ended up being a perfect fit. I knew a couple of the guys before I signed that. With Gerardo Parra joining, a bunch of former Diamondbacks were on that team who I played with, and we all were friends. No one cared who got the credit. It was all about winning baseball games. And when you do something like that, special things can happen. I truly think that was the main reason why we stuck together. We were able to make a great run in the playoffs. So many games could have went the other way, but I think with the group we had, made things a little bit easier for us.
We're talking to Patrick Corbin. He is a world champion. So you mentioned Max Scherzer, Patrick, in Game 7. I mean, this guy was barely able to move on Sunday. Then he comes out on Wednesday, and he's just battling. I mean, battling. You already knew how tough he was. You know how badly he wants to win. So what were you thinking, though, as you watched him pitch in that game?
Yeah, the day that he came to the field when he was supposed to start, he's in a neck brace, just kind of laying down and really couldn't move, and you knew he had to be hurting if he was taking the ball for a World Series game. So he was able to get some rest there, get some treatment, and when we heard that he was able to go, everyone was excited, and we didn't know how long that was going to be, how long that would hold up, and everyone was just ready. Heck of a job he did to hold them to two runs and strand so many runners on the base in that game to keep us in it.
Patrick Corbin is joining us. I think you got to take a step back, right? Like, we all just kind of assume this is what you guys do. Can you kind of explain what that's like when you pay the price that you pay, you work as hard as you do, guys go to battle the way they do, when you see the kind of sacrifice and battle that he has in him, how does that bond 25 guys or even more in that organization? Can you explain what that's like to a layperson?
Yeah, this it kind of started when we got Gerardo Parra. He brought that, just the energy, the excitement. He kind of got people out of their comfort zone. You see Strasburg dancing, the hugging, all that stuff. And we just had fun with each other. And early in the season, we did have a lot of injuries. Things weren't going our way. But we just knew if we stuck together, just keep believing in ourselves, things could turn around. And I thought Davey did an amazing job there, just never changed his attitude, came to the field every day and did his best.
Strasburg, man, that's not his deal at all, is it? Dancing, kind of hanging out like that, having fun. Like, what did that tell you that he kind of gave into that and became one of the guys like that?
Yeah, he was just that's the being a part of a team. And when you have guys like that who will do things for the team, look what happened. We won a championship.
We're talking to Patrick Corbin. So the game rolls around and, you know, Scherzer battles through five innings, and then you come in the sixth inning. What kind of emotions were you feeling entering the sixth inning of Game 7 of the World Series down 2-0?
I honestly felt I felt prepared. I felt the same. I wanted the ball. I tried staying loose the whole game, not knowing when my name was going to be called. And I honestly had no idea how many innings I'd throw, if it was one bat or three innings like I did. So I did a couple times early in the postseason, something that I wasn't used to, but you want to be in these games. You want to go out there and help your team win. And Was lucky enough to do that, kept us in the ball game. Our offense did a great job of scoring some runs late, and we were able to come away with a win.
Patrick Corbin is joining us talking about the World Series experience. I got to ask you, though, by the time Game 7 rolled around, you'd already pitched more this year than you had in any previous MLB season. But as you point out, Patrick, it's Game 7. So how are you feeling out there on the mound? Like, how much did you have in your arm at that point?
I honestly felt great. The ball felt like it was coming out the best it had all year. I mean, those games are the games you want to pitch in. The biggest game, Game 7 of the World Series, I think I'll be able to look back on it and see how cool that moment was to have an opportunity to pitch in that game. And but yeah, like I said, we didn't know what was going to happen. All the starters were in the bullpen that game with Max's neck and back problem. We weren't sure what he was going to do.
All right, so the offense breaks out in the seventh, and then you've got a 4-2 lead. That obviously changed things for you. You give them three huge innings. What did it feel like to hand it over to Daniel Hudson, knowing you needed three outs to become world champions?
I was excited when we signed him. I just knew he's a guy who wants the ball in big situations. Himself going through two Tommy Johns, and couldn't be happier for him to get the final out of the World Series. And I mean, he was huge all that since we picked him up for us. And I mean, we wouldn't have been there without him.
Patrick Corbin joins me for another moment or so. I have to ask you about a conversation that you had with Dan Heron in spring training when you were in Arizona that made a huge difference. You made the point that the conversation was not about big things, but it was about small things. And I want to ask you about that, Patrick, because I see Dan Heron. He lives in the same neighborhood as I do. I see him in the gym. He is such a good dude. He is a great, great dude. What was it about that conversation, and what kind of an impact did it have on you?
Yeah, so he kind of was just looking. He did our starters in Arizona and did reports for us and things like that. And just walking into spring training one day, we just kind of talked about some simple things. And, hey, why not throw your breaking ball more if it's your best pitch? So I looked into that and made sense. And, I mean, honestly, it seems pretty obvious. And then just being smarter about when you're pitching inside or when you're throwing your fastball and what counts. And just small things like that pretty much changed the way that I threw. You always hear throw your fastball, get your fastball down and things like that early in games. But for me, this is kind of what's been working.
All right, then finally, I know you grew up in New York and you played some college ball in Florida. Tom Kochman, who was an Angel scout, said that he loved you, and not just for your game, but because of who you are as a person. In fact, he went as far as to say that you're one of his sons. How would you describe the relationship that the two of you have?
Yeah, he's an incredible person. He's this guy who drafted me, and I got to play for him in rookie ball my first season. He was my manager, so I believe he drafted Howie Kendrick as well. So he reached out to us and just thanked us for everything. And I remember how upset he was when the Angels traded me away. But he's got an eye for baseball and talent, and was happy I got to play for him for the year that I did.
Patrick, in terms of Kendrick, like, it's kind of a tired cliche, like that phrase, pro's pro. This guy's the definition, the epitome of a pro's pro, isn't he?
For sure. I mean, you got him. We got a bunch of older guys. I think we're the oldest team in baseball. And I mean, Howie was obviously a huge part of that. And I'm just glad for a lot of those guys that we finally did it.
All right, so you finally did it. My final question, how do you approach the offseason? You've already been to a Capitals game. You guys went shirtless on the Zamboni. That had to be awesome. Do you continue to enjoy the win a little bit longer and rest up before you get back to work? What do you do with the offseason going forward?
Yeah, I'm in Arizona now. I'm going to be headed to Mexico for a couple weeks for vacation, and probably after that, going to get things back going. But I just want to enjoy this and have as much fun as I can.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you making time for us now that it's done to come on the program. And Ben, I looked it up. Patrick, it's been 6 years since you came on the program, so it's good to have you back. Congrats on the World Championship. Enjoy the offseason. Hope you can do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's go to Orlando, Eric. Eric's in for you. What's your beef? Eric, what's up? What's your beef?
Well, Romy, I have a beef with everybody who has a beef with me, specifically that clown Justin in Melbourne. I'm not landlocked. I have captain friends up and down the East Coast that require my tournament-winning ability to rig bait and find fish. And, yeah, I know Steve Grogan. I actually hung out with Russ Francis and Steve Nelson at fundraisers. And the yacht hooks are compliments of our captains. Out.
My man was fired up. I've got beef with all those idiots who are taking a run at me. I'm not landlocked. I'm landlocked.
I don't fish on boats, okay, Matt?
Eric is getting more and more upset, man. You can hear it. Like, he can barely get it out. I know Steve Grogan. I know Russ Francis. Where was John Hanna? Andre Tippett's been on my yacht. Andre Tippett has been on my yacht. Every sports talk radio show needs a furious sport fisherman. And I've got one. I've got the best one. It's freaking Eric in Orlando. Liz, what's up?
Hey, Jim. I wanted to congratulate you again on the Hall of Fame, and I have some thoughts. We have become the most dysfunctional radio family ever known in the world. And I want to thank you because of your show. We got the Newt Show, Stucknut, the Belligerent Nuck Podcast, and the Woodscopes. I use gloss like blue hairs, dirt naps, being myopic, gravy training, and going to the basement in my regular vocabulary, which most of my family and friends now understand. And about your speech, Jim, I have some thoughts or maybe advice. When you think Albie, will the PA system loudly play? No. And I want to remind you of some people you should thank. Fat people like Belly Clarkson and Cake Shelton, both stars of the The Voice. And, of course, you should mention Val Kilmer, Kirstie Alley, and Global Warming. Even animals, the Rat Family, the Rogue Donkey, bellowing during Jim and Fall River's smack-off call. But most of all, you should thank Toby and Houston for putting Larry Brown's crank on the map forever. I'm out.
Good night now!